This is baby steps to fuzzing, right? With burp. So, whoa, oh, that's spider results. All right, let me, I'm just lazy. Delete host. And then I'll add him back in. So we are trying to, we're trying to attack this web authentication form. Okay. We know a valid username. We've been provided a valid username of Marvin. I'm just going to put ASDF in there. And it comes back and says, error, incorrect username or password. Please try again. Okay. So I've got that in burp now. So I should be able to see that one. Okay. Login PHP. And we see this little envelope suggests that it's a post. So we've got, here's my post, the response, it comes back. We can see this form login, incorrect username or password. Now, just thinking about it at this point, what is a way that I can automate parsing my results to determine when I'm successful? Like just not technically how you're gonna do it, but thinking through it conceptually. Yeah, grep match the error. Well, that's specifically how to do it. So we see the cheater. we see incorrect username or password. Well, if we don't see that, then it feels like we've stumbled upon something good, right? So we know that that's an indicator of bad password. We don't yet know what an indicator of good password is, but we could do a little grep match for this and say no. Show me when that is not present, right? Show me when that is not there, and that will be an easy indicator of success, right? Does that make sense? Just conceptually. But you need to get in the habit of thinking through how you're going to consider your results. What are you going to look for? You know, we see that this one is a response of, what's the status code? 200. So bad is 200. Okay, we're not getting sorry, you're not authorized. Well, it's not basic or digest. So we get a 200 okay. 200 okay, you're a loser, right? That's what it just told me. Yeah. So I want to figure out what is not 200 okay, you're a loser. What is something good? What's an indicator of good? Don't know it yet, but I could do a little inverse match. So useful to start thinking in those terms. It's going to help you with your fuzzing. So we send it to intruder. Target, we're just going to skip it, leave it as is. I just have to say, you don't realize it if you haven't used burp, but this right here, this start attack button, it almost gives me chills that it actually exists. It just makes me so happy. So, like, it's lame. It's lame how happy this makes me. Because it used to be that you would have to get through setting up everything, and then you have to go to intruder start attack. And that's just lame. Like, I have to go so far away. Oh, it's just frustrating. I don't have an attention to detail, but apparently I'm easily annoyed, right? That's the way it is. So this makes me so happy that he has added that. This is a relatively new feature. I'm going to attack this form. I hit clear. It tries to auto-populate. Here, let me do auto. It tries to automatically guess what you want to hack. Well, it guessed wrong. I don't want to hack all of those things. Marvin is actually what I want. So I'm going to do it a different way now. I have double-clicked on this field, and I'm hitting clear. If you've got multiple that are correct and you just need to get rid of one, then that's an easier way rather than hitting clear and adding all the other ones back. So get rid of that. Get rid of that. Now I'm just left with what I want. ASDF, I want to attack that. I've got only one position. What's my payload that I'm going to use? It's going to be some passwords. So I'm only going to have one payload. I'm only going to have one position. That sounds like sniper, one shot, one kill, right? That works. So no changes to the attack type. I need to come out with my payload. Now, the lab, I'm not going to say the lab is wrong, because the lab is not wrong. It's just not necessarily the way that you're supposed to do it. I don't know why, but I and almost every pentester at pentester I know, our default way of using a file is with the runtime file. That's like the way that we always do it. And so that's just my natural like inclination is to use the runtime file. The runtime file is not what you actually want. Okay? It totally works. And it's kind of cool the way it works, but it's not what you actually need. All you really need is the simple list. It's already there. Okay? So let me show you runtime file. Just that's the way your lab had you do it, and that's fine. It's perfectly acceptable. It clearly works. Runtime file, select my file, opt word list, splash data worst passwords. How many passwords are in that file? 25. What is it saying here? 11 approx. What? You are just confused. What's going on? Well, it's because runtime file is a weird one. Runtime file opens up a file and keeps that file handle open. It doesn't open it and say, all right, I got all the stuff out of there. It opens it and hangs out. The idea is, imagine if I'm figuring out passwords like all the time. I've got this guy running. I find, oh, I've got a new username that's valid. Oh, I've got a new password that's valid. I append it to this file, automatically attack launches. That's runtime file. It allows you to change the file as it's actually the attack is going on. We don't need that. Okay? We just need a static, give me everything that's in the file right now, and then we're done with it. Does that make sense? So runtime file, that's why it says approximately 11. Really? That's lame. What we need is simple list, load, here's my file, and it knows exactly that it's 25. And it shows you the details. That's what we actually, that's to me the best way of doing this, but the fact that I have a penchant and like, I know a number of people. For instance, I had an instructor that was helping out. They were TA in this class, and I went through this little spiel and said, hey, by the way, you don't need a runtime file, you can actually use simple list. He was gobsmacked. And this is somebody that does app pen testing and has for years. He said, wait a second, I didn't even know you could do that. I've always used runtime file, and I was totally the same way, and most of us. I don't know if that just predates simple list or what, but all of us are doing it just lamely. That's lame, yeah. So simple list is what you need, okay? Oh, nice, nice. Maybe it's because it's got the word file in the name that we said, ah, file, that's what we need, yeah? List, I don't need a list, I need a file. Okay, so are we good? We're good. Now, in truth, options, we didn't have you go there, but options is where you can tweak how it does some of the requests, but also in looking at the results. So if you scroll down, you'll see a number of things that begin with grep. Grep match, grep extract, grep payloads. Okay, we'll come back to these, but grep match. What's my grep match that I really need? Well, I want something that says like, what was it? Incorrect username or password? Is that what it was? Is that like exactly it? Okay. I can do an add that adds that to the bottom of the list. Okay. And then it automatically checks this flag result items. Okay. Just a heads up there. I'm going to click start attack. It says, I'm going to be slow on purpose, okay? So it's going to be slow on purpose because it wants you to buy the real version, okay? The built-in default grep match actually works because error is, remember it said error, incorrect username or password, so that's actually fine. But let's check our grep match. It's going to be at the far right. Here's a column, incorrect username or password, check, 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 check. Well, we've got one that's unchecked. So that's a different way of getting at the same results. Now, that's not the way we had you find it. We had you find it based on the length of the result. They're all the same, all the same, all the same. Which one is different and does not belong? Okay, all 551s except for this guy. This guy's longer. Okay, the content length is different. And we see that was the request. That was let me in. Okay. I'm going to do request in browser. Okay. Copy. Paste. Let's see if it works. Successful form authentication. So just had a, it's kind of like repeater. It uses, that's using that Burp built-in web server. So if you're ever building a class, I highly recommend you check out NASA because they've got lots of awesome looking images that you can use for free because they're all in the public domain. So yeah, that's cool. So that's Hollywood, California, right? No, I'm just kidding, right? I'm not one of those. Oh, certainly. The one that I just did?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is my request that was good. And I don't want to, I'm lazy, so I don't want to put in the username and password. So I right-clicked and said show request in browser. And you can do in original session or in current browser session. So if I had an active session token before that was still valid, I could do that. If I need to use the current session, then I do this one in current browser session. Okay. So copy. It pops up this little thing. You say copy, and then you go and hit paste. And what this is doing, http://burp, that's the burp built-in web server. And repeat, it's kind of like, it's just a way of automating it. So when I do this, burp will say, oh, wait, I know what you mean. You want me to actually send this request. And then it does. Okay? So if you just go, for instance, to http://burp, burp. Okay. It says, hey, this is the web app. Okay. Oh, what? No. Okay. We're not doing that. So, but that's using the web server to actually pull that off. You can go into, I thought it was just burp. I don't often use the web server like this. I use it for what I just showed you, but that's it. I think you can do like history. Yeah. So burp/history, and you can see all the requests that have gone through. And that repeat was just kind of automating, you know, something that it knew about. Question? Comment?
Yeah, for like the website that kind of blocks you off after like 3 attempts and everything, just that you can put it
in. So for a site that locks you out after a few requests, is that what you said?
Right.
Yeah, this would absolutely not work. That's less common than you think it is. It's less common than you think it is for web applications, because think about how easy it would be for an adversary to lock out every account, and we've seen that happen. We've seen it happen with financial institutions, where it only takes a few requests, and it's easy to guess usernames or enumerate usernames. And I can just lock out all of your accounts and greatly increase your workload on your help desk, on, you know, and that's just, then it feels ugly. And I could just set up a script that did this over and over and over again and not effectively DOS you, but kind of DOS you. So that's something that if sites are going to do it, then they are often going to have to do some auto shunning, and they're going to try to block certain people that are sending too many requests. And there's a lot of nuance there. So it's honestly the automatic lockout of accounts is not nearly as common as you would expect in web applications. We expect it in operating systems, but that's not something that we anticipate is going to be publicly exposed and able to be automated. Okay. Yes, sir. They can do a CAPTCHA. They absolutely can to try to slow us down, to try to make it right. So they absolutely can, and that would absolutely, well, it wouldn't absolutely work. It would be a way to try to keep us from automating things. But there's always a workaround, right? Yes, sir. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's the different side of this. So your colleague points out we can go to response and we can do render right here, which is the render view. This usually works pretty well. And this is kind of its own rendering engine. Okay. This is not the actual browser. This is its own rendering engine, which is usually pretty good. But you can do show response in browser as well. Okay. So let's do that one. And then it just takes us to the response, right? Without even resubmitting the request. So you know, just kind of different exposure to burp. I know that's not something that was formally in your lab, but getting you more comfortable in burp is definitely one of my goals with the course. Yes, sir. Yes. This here? It doesn't, the bottom is blank until you actually click on one. So once you click on one, then it's always there. But after you just launch your attack, until you click on any result, the bottom isn't shown at all. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah, because our screenshot shows us already having clicked, and you're like, ah, mine's broken. I mean, because it's kind of odd that nothing is there until you click, and there's nothing selected by default anymore, right? It used to be that the zero request was selected by default, but no longer. Other questions? We'll have more opportunity to play with burp fuzzing and also zap fuzzing here shortly. Cool. Fuzzing is a critical skill for app testing, and you're starting to scratch the surface. You're going to do more with it in both Zap and Burp and get cooler and cooler and kind of build that technique and build your capability over time. So let's talk now about information leakage flaws. Little old information leakage, right? That just sounds like a level one, you're going to ignore me. Like, if ever there was one, oh, it's just an information disclosure issue. You know, just that's all. It just exposes like a million PII records. Just information leakage. Oh, wait. So information leakage can be, oh, who freaking cares? Or it can be, oh my gosh, the most sensitive of sensitive. Right? Depends on the data that's actually being leaked. Yeah? So one type of information leakage vulnerability that we're going to be looking at is directory indexing. But in truth, many of the injection flaws, the way that we figure out that the flaw exists is through them giving us too much information, right? The classic SQL injection error messages that, you know, you could characterize that as an information leakage issue. They're telling you too much. Now they can get rid of it. They've gotten rid of, if they, for instance, said, oh, I'm sorry, that didn't seem to work, instead of saying, we have an error in your SQL syntax, right? Then they would have gotten rid of the information leakage aspect of the vulnerability, but they wouldn't have addressed the underlying SQL injection. Does everybody appreciate that? It just wouldn't be error-based SQL injection, okay? So there is an information leakage element in classic SQL injection where you're getting error messages. So there's lots and lots and lots of different instances of these types of flaws. We saw the server status. Remember that one? You force browsed and you found server status, you found MWiki. Server status is an information leakage issue, right? Web servers can be configured to expose that. And, you know, it's not necessarily something that's directly exploitable, but they can give you information that's useful, especially if there's sensitive information in the URL. Right, you can see that sort of stuff in the server status page. We've got PHP info. This is a common one to see. You see PHP info, and it gives you a lot of details about the configuration, about paths, about versions, about what modules are enabled. So that can be an information leakage. Again, not directly something that we exploit and a vulnerability that exploits, but it gives us more information to better target. To better target and better understand the victim application. Another one, and this is the one we're going to focus on in a lab in a second, is directory browsing. It's sometimes also referred to as directory indexing. You've seen this. It feels kind of old school. You hit a web page and it gives you this. Yeah, you still see that with some regularity, oftentimes with like mirrors where they're hosting files. You know, they don't need anything fancy, anything pretty. It's just a list of files that you can download. That's it. Well, this gives you the ability to see the entirety of this directory, all the contents of this directory. Doesn't necessarily mean that you have access to all those files, but you can at least see what the files are. Now, who cares? This is an information leakage flaw. But it could be that the application isn't intending to show you all of these files, that it's just a misconfiguration that exposes this directory index. Now, When you navigate a website, when you hit a site, you put in the URL. You probably just put in www.google.com. You probably just put in www.amazon.com. You probably just put in whatever. You end with the domain. But you're not browsing a domain. You're browsing resources. What's the actual resource that you're pulling? Maybe you're trying to pull Slash. Quite often you're going to see applications will say, oh, wait a second. Yeah? It says Slash, but really, there's an index file, right? Sometimes you'll see it actually in the address bar. You'll see the index file reference. So you just hit the domain, and then all of a sudden you're sitting there at index.php. I didn't ask for index.php. What's going on here? Okay. Well, this is one way of handling an index, which is if there's not an index file in there, then it says, hey, here's the index of this directory. Another option is there's an index file in that directory. When you try to hit the directory, it says, oh, I see what you need. You need the index file. And it automatically, the server automatically renders for you the index file. There are other instances where an index file is dynamically generated on the fly. It generates one on the fly. There isn't an actual index file in that directory, but it generates something and then presents it. Okay? So different options. So how do you find this issue? Well, we try to browse to directories, not to files. So you see a link that's pointing to blah, 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 you know, index.php. You just lop off the index.php and see what happens. It might automatically, you know, send you back to the index. It might show you something like this. We are also going to hit basically every path, every file path. We're going to get rid of the files and just look at every single directory. If it's a public-facing application, Google can actually identify these sorts of issues for you. And there's just a simple little lame Google dork for finding them. That's great if it's publicly accessible and it's been indexed. Then maybe you can just Google search for it. But there's lots and lots of different types of information leakage. And there are many sort of directory indexing leakage flaws, but there are also just, I mean, there's a whole host of different types of information leakage. And it's not a vulnerability that most people even care about. Okay. But even if it's not crazy sensitive data, for us, information leakage flaw can mean the difference between successful exploitation and unsuccessful, because it could be that context that we need to determine how to be successful. So let's figure out how to find all these different directory indexing, all the different paths that will show us that index of page. Okay. Well, lots of different tools can do this automatically. Nikto can do this. We can use dir busting to, you know, come up with tons of different paths. We can manually fuzz it with attack payloads, but we can also manually fuzz with intruder, with Zaps fuzzer. Okay. So let's have a lab where we're going to be looking at a particular case of this. You might have seen this before. This is actually somewhat still common, in particular in university environments. We've got, you hit a URL, slash, the tilde sign, and then a username. Have you seen these before? Yeah? This used to be more common than it is today, but I still find it with some regularity in internally, but also at in university environments, you see it with some regularity. The idea, what's that? Yeah. Yep. So what this is, this little tilde username action here, is they are providing every single user account with their own web server, right? Well, their own website. So that tilde username is actually pointing to the home path and then public HTML, right? So inside, Arthur Dent has his own little home directory. He's got a folder, public HTML. Anything he drops there will be hosted, okay? So they commonly have that index set up. So unless he slaps in an index file, then you will see the index of approach. So pretty common to see it here. Now, Apache still supports this functionality. It's user dir. What we're going to do is we're going to try to assess this. We're going to hit a system, and we're going to look for these tilde username directory browsing issues. So your goal is you're going to hit www.sec542.org/tilde first initial last name. You want to look for A through Z for a collection of last names. And we give you explicitly the last names that we want you to use. I think there's five of them. You know, lovely ones that you would probably come up with anyway, like Beeblebrox, yeah? So that's clearly the first one that you would come up with. But we've got a number of names that we explicitly want you to use, and we'll show you what they are, if not here, then in just a couple slides. So I want you to navigate, right? I want you to fuzz for all these different options. Tilde, everything A through Z, and a collection of last names. So we're going to do this in a couple of fashions. We're going to do it first, a simple little Python script that is built for doing this. Okay, just simple little, one of my instructors created this, Adrian Dubopre, which that's a French name, so I probably just totally butchered it. But he created this. It's Python script, find accounts. It's on your system already, and this is the short form. The version that you have is much more completely commented. So you want to get a little exposure to Python and crafting requests with Python, then you can look at this. And we'll be playing a bit more with Python later in the class. So we're going to do it one way, which is just a simple little script. This script, you pass it as input a file containing last names. And then it's going to prepend it with A through Z, and it's going to hit our exact path. Okay, well, that's pretty straightforward. But that's kind of the easy button. So setup is you create a file of last names, and here are the names that we expect. Okay, so okay, you're going to create a file of last names, put it in your home directory. So tilde is home student, right? Tilde is your home directory. So you're going to create this in a file named last names. You're going to populate it with the last names that we tell you, and then you can use find accounts, okay? So use find accounts and point it at last names. All right, that's great. Now, though, this is the more real aspect of the exercise, which is now you're going to recreate that functionality using Zap. You're going to use Zap's fuzzer to recreate this functionality. So run this guy. That's pretty straightforward, pretty easy. You populate that last names file, run find accounts against it, look at the results, figure out which ones are valid, not valid usernames, figure out which ones have directory indexing, right? That directory indexing issue, okay? Now, Zap, fuzz, and I want you to fuzz and recreate this functionality. So tilde, A through Z, collection of last names, okay? So you've got your last names file, all right? That's your no hints version. Okay, if you need to, feel free to flip the page. This is our first use of Zap's fuzzer. What do you think of Zap's fuzzing? Filled with awesome sauce? I like it. I'm especially fond of it compared to what it used to be, which was, wow, epically lame. Right? It used to not allow for multiple positions or multiple payloads. So it was sniper and only sniper. Except it wasn't even as cool as Sniper because you didn't get to pick a whole bunch of payload types. You got very limited payload types. So it has improved drastically, and I expect continued improvement. Zap is an extremely actively developed project. They're constantly tweaking and updating and improving upon their current state of the art. So I absolutely anticipate it will improve and improve and improve some more. Much better than it used to be. But still, I'm still Burp fanboy. That's okay. It's okay. Not much is going to change that, I don't think. All right, so let me build my last names file here. Okay, My names are Beeblebrox. Tell me if I typo. Dent Prefect. How many of you read that? How many of you have read Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? This is where you pretend and you raise your hand anyway. Yeah. Okay, so if you read it, how many of you actually read that as Ford Prefect? Because I sure didn't. It was Ford Perfect for a long time in my mind before I listened to the radio show. Then I was like, who is this person? Right? What is this? It was so weird. It was very, very off-putting for me. I thought it was Ford Perfect forever. Ford Perfect. Oh, weird. So your brain changed, yeah, between the first time and second time. Okay, so I've created my file. Now we can do the find accounts. I'm not that worried about the find accounts. I mean, it works. That's great. And pretty fast, it submits A through Z for all of them. So A, Beeblebrox, B, Beeblebrox, and it knows what the response is, it's looking for to determine that this is okay. And you can look at the Python to figure that out. I'm much more interested, however, in the zap piece of this. So let's hit tilde A dent, I believe was my starting point. There we go. We got this one. We have to look at important.txt. All right, we got Vogon rolled again. So, passwords.txt, you know, I'm just saying. Drupal server, oh my. That could end well. All right, so we got that stuff. So we're aware of this one, and now Zap should be aware of it, except that it's not because I didn't pick my proxy. Let's try that again. Nothing up my sleeve. No whammy. Stop. Where are you? There he is. Get a dunt. Okay? So get a dunt. We got request. We got response. And the response gives me the details that I want. So I want to fuzz this bad boy. Okay? Easier, honestly, oftentimes for me at least, to find stuff in the proxy history. Okay? Here we go in the proxy history. We can do it from up here as well, but proxy history, right click, and we want to fuzz this bad boy. So attack, fuzz. Now we have to decide what we're going to change. Well, we've got two things we need to change. We want that A to actually be A through Z. So we want one position right here, fuzz locations, add one. We want it to be A through Z. So let's add a payload. We need it to be A through Z, so A, B, C. That would work, but everyone would laugh at you. So we're going to go for file fuzzer. Okay, JBro fuzz works here. Alphabets, English alphabet. So that'll be my A through Z. Okay, say OK. That gives me one, and you can see some of the details. So the first value is A. Number of payloads 26. All right, so now we've got dent. We add this bad boy, add again. Here, what do we want? This is where we want our file. Okay, we want that file that is tilde, and it doesn't let me type it in there. That's select last names. Okay. So we've got A, we've got dent, and wow, could you pick two colors that are closer together? That's great. Those are actually different colors, apparently. They don't look that different up here. So we got payloads. What about processors? Oh dear. What do you want to do to it? Right, we don't want to do anything to it, I just want to show you. So this is, you know, ways that we can process. We can URL encode our data. So if you're submitting form data that expects to it be passed as URL encoded, so just a heads up, you know, this is some processing. What do you not see a lot of? You don't see a lot of, hey, let me match on this, let me grep on that, not a lot of that. Not a lot of, How do we automatically identify things? So, you know, grep match, grep payloads, that's you know, still some features that are needed in my opinion. But this looks pretty good. Start the fuzzer, okay? And then let's look at our results here. So what do we got? We got a whole bunch of 404 not founds. We got some 200 OKs. So we can sort based on the code. Note that we're in fuzzer and not history, okay? We're in fuzzer, and if we had done multiple fuzzes, then you'd see a list here. So we sort by code, sort again. I think I went the wrong way. I totally did. There we go. No. There we go. All right, so these are my OK ones, okay? So 200 OK, that works. What else could you use besides the status code? Let's say that they were all 200 OKs. What could we use? It looks like we can use the response, the size response, right? So the content length of the response. So these guys are greater than 215, 216, yeah? These guys are all 215, except for this one. Why is that one not 200? Because it's so long, maybe. All right. No, that ain't right. Okay. Response header size. Response header size is longer with that one. Okay. I'm going to geek out on it, or I just need to stop. Just walk away. It's okay. It's okay. It can be different. We found a dent, Ford Prefect, a Jones, right? We found all the things that we expected to find, but we approached it in a manner that you're more likely to actually approach it, right? So in this case, this obviated the need for that script. So we didn't really need that script. We can do it on our own once we figured out the pattern that we wanted to submit. Cool? Any questions? All right. So now we're going to dig in, and we're going to play more. We got a lab later today that digs further into zap fuzzing, and we'll do more of that, and we'll absolutely do more of burp fuzzing. Okay, but now let's move on into authentication. HTTP. We often will hear that HTTP is stateless. Okay, it's stateless. It doesn't keep up with state. You also know that from the earliest days, HTTP 0.9, the initial specification didn't include any form of authentication. Well, now there is built-in authentication to HTTP. There's RFCs associated with HTTP basic and HTTP digest mode authentication. And those are both still used. We'll talk about those guys. There's also the most common one, which is forms-based authentication. That's easily the most common way to do authentication. We'll talk about why. And there are many, many other different schemes, but these are your intro ones. Okay. First up, we got basic authentication. This was affording us the ability to authenticate via HTTP. So this was a big change, rather than just being exclusively anonymous. Yay! Don't get too excited too quickly, though, because there are some things that are painful about basic authentication. What's the one that you know off the top of your head? What's the one that everybody remembers? What's the big tragedy of basic authentication? Oh, yeah. Clear text, okay? It's not encrypted. Even the password's not encrypted. The password is encoded. Right, encoded bang equal encrypted, not the same, because encoding you can decode. Encryption, yes, you can decrypt, but only if you have the magic key. Yeah? So it's base64 encoded, which means that an adversary that's suitably positioned that sees this data can, well, determine the clear text. Okay, so this is built in to the HTTP specification, so it's really your web server that's going to handle the authentication in this case. Here's what basic looks like. Client requests something that is protected, that requires authentication. The server says, what are you even talking about? You're not allowed, right? You can't do that. So it sends me a 401 and says, dude, you're not authorized, you're not cool enough. try harder. Yeah. So it sends me this back, and when it does this, it tells me I'm not allowed, and it responds with this new header of www authenticate that we haven't seen before. It says, hey, I'm basic, and here's the realm. What this is going to result in is the gray pop-up box. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the sexiest way to authenticate ever. Gray pop-up box in the browser. That's really ugly, isn't it? Yeah. You get your gray pop-up box. It's only as pretty as your browser makes it. So you get the gray pop-up box asking for your username and password. You submit this, and that's going to be translated into this lovely Base64 encoded data. How do you know that's Base64 encoded? What you got? Like, if I didn't tell you this was Base64 encoded, could you pick that out? Would you realize that? And how would you realize that? What's a tell? What's the most obvious tell? The equal is what most people look for. Does Base64 encoding require the equal? No, the equal is padding. So 1 to 2 equal at the end. All right, never 3, because 3 is not needed. Okay? So it depends on what it ends on, what boundary it ends on, whether it gets equals at the end or not. So equals not required. Okay? Not necessarily the case. How else could you tell? Well, you'd really have to guess based on the character set. Base64 character set, it's case sensitive, so uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and then also slash and plus. There's also, this is more recent, it's something that we are seeing more of. There's also safe Base64. You're starting to see more of, because plus, people don't like plus so much, right? In like web. So you're seeing it get replaced, and you're seeing them basically change Base64 encoding to safe Base64 encoding. So you're starting to see that somewhat, so just a heads up there. But it's really the character set that calls out that this is Base64, or the fact that it says basic, which implies Base64. So we can decode that. We can decode that, which means that we can get clear text password. What is required of us to do this as pen testers? What would be required for me to be able to see your password if you're using basic authentication? Wireshark, that would work. Okay. What else is required?
Burp decoder.
No. Burp decoder could decode it. Okay. What's required in order for me to be able to pull this off? I have to be in the middle. I have to be, the way that David, I think it was just kind of a beautiful, pithy little phrase. He says, I think it's him, in the Web App Hackers Handbook, he says, you need to be suitably positioned. Oh, suitably positioned. Yeah, that's just, you need to be a man in the middle, don't you? Right? You need to be in between the communication between a client doing this lame authentication and the server. Yeah? So that's honestly a pretty high bar, isn't it? Okay. Now, if they're doing Base64 to a public web application, okay, yeah. Do you trust your ISP that much? Do you trust all the admins that are associated with the proxies? And you know, there's a lot of people and a lot of devices that are in the middle. Okay, but for us as pen testers, we say, oh my gosh, this is so lame and weak. But are we going to exploit this vulnerability? Not unless we're suitably positioned. Does everybody appreciate that? To me, what you're going to lead with in every report, everybody does this, it's Base64 encoded. Oh, that's terrible. It's not encryption. You go into this thing, you sound all smart. So then they say, all right, we'll slap it in an SSL tunnel. And they mean TLS, yeah. So we're going to slap it in an SSL tunnel. Is this okay now? Hey, I just cut off your your argument at the knees. There's still lameness, okay? There's still lameness. To me, the encoding piece is not the scariest part. That's not the reason I hate Base64. That's not the reason I hate basic authentication. It's not because of this. That is just one thing. But that's one thing that's honestly quite easy to resolve through shoving it over an encrypted tunnel. More significant, basic authentication has no concept of logout. How do you log out? You don't. Okay. How do you log out? You have to kill the browser. Yeah? Kill the browser. Okay. So, no logout button. That's kind of weird. I don't love it. It also, this requires, I mean, you wouldn't do this because it doesn't have any anti-replay protection, which means if I captured your attempted authentication, I could replay it and authenticate again. But that doesn't really matter because I've got your actual password, so I'm good here. I've got your username and password, so who cares if I can replay it? But to me, the biggest ones are there's no concept of logout. There's also no built-in concept of lockout, but I don't care so much about that one. Okay, but the logout one is big for me. It's also, there's no kind of identity verification built in. So I can say, hi, I am realmgoogle.com. And then, you know, yeah, I'm not google.com, but I am realmgoogle.com. And here is basic. Okay, so there's no origin authentication built into this. So, you know, I could spoof and masquerade as another server, perhaps. Okay, so Digest was created to fix the fix basic. This is also built into HTTP, something that your web service control built to fix basic. What it does fix is the most egregious to most people issue, which is the encoded, right? It fixes that. It is a challenge response protocol, challenge response authentication protocol. It is not. You do not send the encoded. You do not send the encoded version, right? You send a hash, and the hash is based on a little piece of random that's been provided to you. So that's the challenge. And then you have to materially change that and hash the result and send it back. So it's a challenge response protocol. There's still no concept of logout. There's still no concept of lockout. There is still, you know, potentially some issues with replay, but they're not as significant because it has this guy, the nonce. What's a nonce? It's like a salt, a seed, or initialization vector. They all in crypto mean about the same thing, which is it's a little piece of random, right? The nonce is a little bit of random that's folded in so that if you try to do something again and you've got a little piece of random that's different, then you'll get a different result. So it's like a cryptographic salt. So my password that I hash with MD5, my password that I hash with MD5 is blah. But if we have salts in play, right, like Linux as opposed to Windows, then we add a little bit of salt, a little bit of flavoring, right, a little piece of random to my password and to your password. As long as those little pieces of random are different, then we yield different hashes. That's what the nonce does. It functions as a little piece of random, and it's for replay protection. Because the server sends you a new nonce with every single request. You try to authenticate. Let's say you authenticate successfully. Someone's sitting there in the middle and they capture your successful authentication. They try to replay it. Not going to work. Why? Because the nonce is different for your turn, your attempt. Now, if the nonce, that same nonce shows up again, then maybe there's some replay issue here. But, you know, that's their attempt at making this harder, okay? But it does use, MD5, that's the classic version, for hashing, so it doesn't do encoded data. From my perspective, yes, okay, it got rid of the issue with the encoding, right? Got rid of that, so you can't decode the digest authentication and get back to clear text the way you can with basic, but it still has the logout issues. It still has the lockout issues. One that I didn't mention on basic or digest, by default, you can authenticate 16,000 times if you want to, right? All at different locations. There's not built-in protection for that, okay? Someone would have to roll that protection in kind of after the fact. So you could have multiple concurrent logins. And again, the biggest one to me is the lack of logout. That makes me cringe because imagine someone using a kiosk to hit your application. They don't have the ability necessarily to kill the browser. So they just navigate to somewhere else. And then someone walks up, hits the back button, and poof, they're authenticated as you. Ouch, that's scary. Which do you think is the most common, basic or digest mode authentication? You didn't fall for the trap, right? Because why would I ask if it were basic? Yeah. Why would I ask if it were Digest? Basic is much more commonly found than Digest, which is, people think that's odd because Digest was supposed to improve upon Basic, but Digest is still kind of lame. It also adds in some complexity, and it doesn't buy you a whole lot. So it's more common to see Basic and Basic shoved over an SSL TLS tunnel. That's significantly more common, right? You see it over a clear text channel, you cringe and smack somebody, right? You see it over SSL TLS, and you have to have a conversation with them, right? Because it's not the most, oh my gosh, flaw of the Base64 encoding issue. Say again? You do still see basic authentication with some regularity. I mean, we see it with mobile applications with some regularity. But again, you hope that it's going to be over at least a tunnel. What's the main reason that people don't use Basic or Digest? What do you think? The primary reason that most applications, especially public-facing applications, will not use Basic or Digest? Because it's ugly. That's like, I'm not kidding. Like, to me, that's the main reason that people don't use it. Because your site looks stupid and old. That's, it doesn't look pretty. It breaks them out of the, you've got your lovely little, right? Somebody came up with your graphic design. It was so pretty. It was so beautiful. And then you got this like, you just went 88 miles in your DeLorean back to the 90s to pull out your authentication mode, didn't you? Right? That is not awesome. Not awesome. So it's ugly. That gray pop-up box. Yes, sir. So, question is, I'm going to change it. Can you choose a nonce, right? Can you choose a nonce if you were trying to attack the server with Digest mode authentication? No, as a rule, they shouldn't let you. You could have a flawed implementation, but they set the nonce and send it to you, and you respond with that same nonce. So if you mismatch, then it should be invalidated, and you can test that in the lab coming up. Right, you could play with that and change the nonce and send it as is. But you would need to know the nonce and know how to craft the MD5 at the same time. Right. So really, honestly, what you would do in that case is you would just authenticate to it because you already have the password. Then you would hit it in the clear without doing replay. You would hit it in the clear and then take whatever nonce they get and then you just put in your username and password because you've already determined it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because if you're at that level, then you've already got more than you need. Integrated Windows authentication. So, single sign-on with your Microsoft account or your Active Directory account, which might be a Microsoft account now, or Landman Challenge Response for the fail, or NT Landman V1 or V2, or more likely Kerberos, right? So IIS for some time now has supported Kerberos, even for web applications and web authentication. So the idea is using an application and just reusing your existing accounts. Okay, this is most Windows Integrated Authentication is most commonly found in internal facing applications because just for me, like me personally, it makes me cringe a little bit the idea of exposing an authentication form that's going to be able to necessarily have some impact on Active Directory, right? Now, you can do it differently, but this is getting, you know, a little deep in the weeds. You can set up something akin to Active Directory style authentication that's kind of pure play using Active Directory just for web-based authentication. Like they've done, the name has changed a couple of times. It was Atom for a while, and then it was LDS, Lightweight Directory Services. But it's basically using it from LDAP perspective for authentication and allowing it for access control. So, you know, that's more common public facing. But Windows Integrated Authentication is most commonly found internal. So your SharePoint, right? You might not even be aware that you're authenticating to those other resources because it's single sign-on. It's automatic without you even having to think about it. You're authenticated locally, and then just magic happens behind the scenes to authenticate you to these other resources. And that's, you know, that's what they want. That's what they absolutely like. Some some challenges with Windows Integrated Authentication? Well, one challenge is if you make this public-facing, then someone now has the ability to lock out your internal domain accounts. So that's good times. Right now, you know, if you allow for account lockout through this, then maybe I can try to lock out all of your internal accounts. That's kind of ugly for you, isn't it? One that's particularly interesting, though, is the potential for CSERF attacks. It's getting ahead of ourselves. We don't really talk about it till day five, but just kind of keep that in the back of your mind, or I'll remind you of it when we get to CSERF. Because of this single sign-on aspect, because of the automatic authentication, we don't have to worry as much about getting someone when they have an actively authenticated session. Because, hey, they're going to be authenticated because it's Windows and it's going to do single sign-on, you know, behind the scenes. Okay? So it seems, in some respects, architected to support this. But that presumes that you find a CSERF flaw. This just makes the exploitation of it a bit easier, potentially. Without question, the most common type of authentication is forms-based authentication. The reason that forms-based authentication is so popular, in my opinion, is because it can be pretty. Because it's HTML forms, so you can make it look as good or as bad as your site normally does, right? And it can be embedded within your site. So it's not something that's jumping out of the page looking ugly, right? It's embedded within your site. Now, forms-based authentication is weird because as far as weaknesses, as far as strengths, it is utterly dependent upon the implementation. This can be worse than basic. Like, this can very easily be worse than basic. You could just, like, do straight-up clear text and pass the credentials as is. Like, you can. Yeah, good choice. But you see really, really stupid stuff, especially if people decide to roll their own authentication. You know, they're not using built-in, they're not using libraries, they're not using frameworks, they're not using, you know, pre-built code for authentication purposes. They just decide, you know what, I got this, I know what I need. Wow, good idea. For me as a pen tester, right? Not for the security of your organization. So forms-based, it totally varies, you know, what it does behind the scenes, how it actually authenticates. It's beautiful for us. Because quite often, this form is going to back directly into an LDAP repository or, very, very commonly, a back-end database. Right? Back-end databases are still the most common authentication back-end for all web applications. So what does that mean to us? That means we're going to smack some SQL injection into this, right? We're going to throw a whole bunch of payloads in there to see if we can cause an impact on that back-end database where these creds are stored. obviously, this needs to go, you know, authentication needs to go over an encrypted channel, and any time anything associated with session tokens, which we'll talk about later, are being passed, it must be encrypted, or you're vulnerable to FireSheep, which we'll talk about, you know, just kind of tangentially later. But forms based auth, extremely popular, it looks pretty, you know, and it's most commonly a back-end database or a back-end LDAP repository. So oftentimes you'll do a little client-side encoding, client-side hashing before the data is sent, even if it's going over an encrypted channel, right? But it varies quite a bit. When you're considering form, we saw our form-based authentication that we just attacked with the fuzzing. When we hit that web page, we initially see a GET. Did you recognize that? We do a GET for that exercise 1 HTML or something like that. We do the GET that is pulling down the HTML that includes the form. So that's the page that includes the form. Now, when we put in our credentials, we hit submit. That is sent to where? How do you know where that's sent to? Is it sent to the same page? Maybe. It depends on the form's action. The action on the form determines where that form gets submitted to. Okay? So the action tells you where it gets submitted to. That would be the processing page. That processing page is then going to, by some method, it's going to have to consult the repository, whether it's LDAP, whether it's a database server. It's got to consult this. So there's these multiple pieces and parts. one thing that's particularly Like, this is a total pet peeve, and it just makes me want to just totally throat punch some developers and marketers, because they're kind of culpable here too. Do you remember the good old days when if you wanted to log into a web application, you had to click a button, you had to click a menu item that said login? It would take you to a page that is nothing for nothing but login, which was of course encrypted, right? You would submit and it would be encrypted. All was right with the world. Do you do that anymore at all for like any application? It's pretty darn rare, isn't it? Yeah, so we got your main page that's loading, your straight up main page that's loading, you want to log in, then it took you to a different page that was absolutely encrypted, whether the front one was or not, absolutely encrypted, separate standalone page, that's it. Now what do we see? We see the front page, right, that has the login form immediately. Why? Because somebody did some like behavioral analysis and said that, you know, 2.1% of users can't be bothered to click an extra button or something like that, right? They want you to authenticate because they want to track everything that you do. We'll just say generally that's the case, yeah? So that login form is kicking it right there on the main page. That's fine. There's nothing really wrong with that. Is that main page encrypted though? Quite often the answer is no. Why? Why would you not encrypt your main page? Because we want our load times to be stellar, epic load times. Oh my gosh, we want it to be so responsive, so fast. We can't be bothered with encryption. But wait, we're asking for credentials. It's kind of important to encrypt that data, isn't it? Yeah, that's okay, because the action points to something that's encrypted. Yeah? So you're never sending credentials over clear text. How do your users know that? Like, how would you as a user know that, hey, I'm on an HTTP page and there's a form asking me for my username and password? Like, how are you going to know that that's actually going to be sent over an encrypted channel? Like, even savvy users like us, how are we going to know? We're going to have to look at the source code of the form and look at the action and see if it's HTTPS? Like, I just feel like that breeds bad behaviors. I'm not a fan. Not a fan at all. So, bit of a pet peeve. Yes, strictly speaking, that's secure, but it rubs me the wrong way, because your users are absolutely not looking at the source code to determine if there's SSL or not. They're just not. So then you're just setting them up to, like, the one thing they know to do is look for that stupid lock. That's the only thing they know to do, and it's not there, and you're asking for credentials? Like, wow, way to breed bad behavior. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the preferred. Like, the real answer is, why use an HTTP anywhere, right? It should SSL everywhere, right? We're seeing more and more traction for this. Latest and greatest version of Burp, not this one. Latest and greatest version of Burp, any HTTP resource is considered a finding now. Anything HTTP is considered a finding. I think that's awesome, right? Because now everybody that just says scan and then spits it out, that's going to be on everybody's findings. Hey, there was an HTTP resource. You've got a vulnerability that needs fixing. Yeah, that's beautiful to me, because now we're going to start like twisting people's arms, because now someone has to backtrack and they've got a report sitting there that some auditor, some regulator that doesn't know what in the world they're looking at says, hey, there's a finding here. I feel like that's an exception, right? Oh, no, I don't care. Yeah, I like it. I like it a lot. So, latest and greatest version of Burp. Now, lack of SSL TLS on any resource is considered a finding. That's a low-level finding for now, but maybe it'll be high next year. Who knows? But I think that is the real answer, is SSL everywhere, right? And we're seeing more and more of that, okay? So this is illustrating. We've got our form. The form actually sends it to the processing code page, right, wherever the action is pointed. Processing code then figures out whether they're authenticated or not by looking at, you know, the LDAP backend, by looking at the database backend. For us, our perspective is, man, this is input, and we're going to smack some input. We're going to smack all input. This is some beautiful input that is very, very commonly associated with backend LDAP and backend database. So we've got a lot of opportunity. A lot of injection attacks are going to be launched at this form without question, right? We'll also be talking later about going after authentication tokens and session information, but that'll come later. Now for something a little different. So, have you ever used a mobile app? Just once. Once, there was this one time. I use mobile apps. Let's say you use like a mobile Twitter client or a mobile Facebook client or a mobile, right? But it's not coming from that vendor itself, yeah? So you've got a third-party Twitter client, maybe something third-party that hooks in and hooks in with Facebook, hooks in with whatever. So you got big major service. You've got lots of third-party tools, third-party extensions, third-party apps that will interface with this. You think, oh man, forget that default built-in Twitter client. This one is totally sweet, and you want to use that. Now, I don't know about you, but my comfort level with giving credentials for a major service that directly is associated with my public relations, right? My comfort level with giving someone else my Facebook credentials, this third-party application, me putting in my Facebook credentials, me putting in my Twitter credentials. Anybody sign up for RSAC yet? Anybody sign up for RSA yet? Have you seen? I should probably turn this off. Hold on.